Well, this morning, we're going to go up to about 30,000 feet in our thoughts, and we're going to stay there. Because unfortunately, when we talk about the sovereignty of God in individual lives, that's going to take a little bit of time that we really can't address today. And besides, I don't know if you'd want it to be addressed individually today. So today, what I want to do is I want to talk about the sovereignty of God in the 2016-11 elections and the sovereignty of God in your life. You know, one of the beautiful things about the Bible is that my sermon for this Sunday was done probably about Tuesday afternoon. And I had it crafted in one way if Hillary Clinton were to win. But now that Donald Trump won, this is kind of the beauty about biblical truth, because the biblical truth remains the same. I had to tweak it a little bit and adjust it a little bit. But when it comes to the sovereignty of God, God was sovereign and God knew exactly who was going to win this election long before the United States ever was into existence. And that should give us a great deal of comfort, because there's still a lot of question marks regarding just exactly what he's going to do or what he's not going to do. What's going to happen to America? You know, we're still, and I still believe, we're in a very much, and I even heard CNN say it, we are in a cultural civil war. And it's as real, this cultural civil war that we are in, as Gettysburg and in the 1850s with the Civil War of slavery. But the difference is there's no body counts. There's no bullets flying, but make no mistake, there's still a war. And it's being fought in the legislative chambers. And CNN was lamenting that they have lost a huge battle in this cultural civil war. But the beauty of the Bible is the Bible remains our anchor. It is it's just our fortress. It's our shelter. He's always the same. Oh, rejoice in the Lord. God makes no mistakes. And even though our life is spinning out of control around us and we have no idea what's going to happen next, we can always come back into the arms of God and hear the great shepherd wrap his arms around us and say, I got you, Dan. You're mine. It's going to be okay. I got you. And that gives us just a little bit of encouragement and gets our head a little bit on straight as we go back out into uncertainty. And for some, the uncertainties of life may be huge. They may be very large, and there may be some very ominous clouds on the horizon that are blowing your way. But we still have that confidence. We have that anchor. We have that shelter. We have that hiding place that we can go to with God. God is in control. Bible Gateway, they had a little devotional on their website, and they said this about Daniel. Daniel, if you study the Bible, you'll meet a man forced to live in a fast-changing and godless society. He faced fears about the future, concerns of his safety, and the discouragement of a world that seemed to be falling apart at warped speed. Sound familiar? But his name was Daniel. Daniel. You remember Daniel in the lion's den? Yes? No? Some of you do. Daniel in the lion's den. But he faced that world spinning out of control at warp speed. He faced that with hope, humility, and wisdom. And he not only thrived, but he changed the world as it was known. We have a couple of grandchildren. As you know, they're coming for Christmas, and we are beginning to get just a little excited about their coming. And we're looking and we're buying some of these gifts at huge discounts. Amazon's got some things going on, and we go down to the 75% off, and we've got some really neat little gifts. But I know that when we open them up, Joshua and Gideon are going to be saying, that's mine, and they're going to be pulling it. And then Gideon's going to say, no, that's mine, and they're going to be pulling it, because there's still that Adamic nature. But you know what? In this world, you and I, sometimes we cry, but it's mine. It's my life. It's my plans. It's my desire. It's my health. And there's a man by the name of Abraham Cooper. He writes this: there is not a single square inch in the whole dominion of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, mine. And especially those of us who are born again believers, Paul writes there in Corinthians, he says, what? Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you? And you are not your own. And why is that? Any of you remember? We have been bought with a price, and that price was the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So there's not a square inch in the domain of our human existence where we can cry out, mine. Rather, God, who is sovereign, he rightly so cries out, mine. But again, there's some beauty in that. Because I am him, his, and he is mine, and Jesus knows my name. And we can trust in him. The sovereignty of God, the elections, and our life. I would like to begin, as you can maybe see there in your bulletin outline, that there is a single, all-inclusive, comprehensive, eternal plan for the world, for the United States of America, and for you here today. God has a plan for each one of us. I want to show you just a couple of verses as we work through here. I don't have time to put all of them through, but I believe on the back side of your bulletin or that outline, there's also some references there as well. Let me show you a couple of things here from Isaiah 46. In Isaiah 46, it says, I am God. And then there's an ellipsis there, that dot, dot, dot. There's an ellipsis. I left some words out. And this is what God is saying. He says, I'm declaring the end from the beginning. The end from the beginning. Let's focus on the elections here. What this is saying, that God knows the end of the United States before the Garden of Eden. Isn't that what he kind of says there? Declaring the end from the beginning. Again, what this verse is saying is, God knows the time and the manner of my death long before my great-great-great-grandmother or father were ever born. And this is one thing that does give us a great deal of comfort, because there's many things I don't understand. Brain's getting a little older. Some of you are a little older can appreciate that just statement. But God never grows weary. He never grows faint. I really appreciate Ken reading Isaiah 40. God is not like us, but God knows how this is all going to work out long before it ever started. And for that, you and I, in many areas of our life, we ought to just be able to go into the lap of God and go, ah, that's nice. I'm glad somebody knows what's going on, because I kind of wonder if anybody does, but God does. He says, from ancient times, things not yet done. So if you want to go back to Daniel, since we mentioned that, you know, Daniel was in the lion's den with the lion. God knew exactly how 2017 is going to end from ancient times. God knew what this next 4 2-year election is going to be like, if we're going to keep or retain the Congress. He knew that while Noah was still building the ark. From ancient times, God knew what was going to happen in our life today. What's are going to happen in the life of America 2, 3, 4 years down the line. But it's not just knowledge. But as we read there a little bit in Isaiah 46, he says, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose. How many of you, those of you who are a little older, how many of you can honestly say your life never really played out the way you thought it was going to? A good number of you have said, you know, my life never really played out the way I thought it was going to. Maybe it turned out better in some ways. Maybe in some ways it didn't turn out so good. But God's plan does play out exactly the way he thought it would. And he's powerful enough and big enough to orchestrate man, governments, cultures, to ensure that it works out according to his purpose. He says, I have spoken and I will bring it to pass. I have purposed and I will do it. Because he is God. So you and I, we can take some comfort in this fact that God has a single, all-inclusive, comprehensive, and eternal plan for America, for you and I, for our children. He's got it down. And he's got the power to bring it to pass. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 11 says, according to the purpose of him who works all things according to the counsel of his own will. Romans 8, 28, 29, it says, and we know that all things will work together for good if you're called according to his purpose and if you love him. Psalm 115 says, but our God is in the heavens and he does whatever he pleases. God's in heaven. He's working. But there's something else that I need you to understand, and that is that we're not fatalists. We don't believe that God is the great puppeteer. God doesn't have us hanging on strings and we're just following, you know, God's choice, and we have no voice in the matter. Because as we look at the next slide here, God does allow in his huge, eternal, comprehensive plan the free will of man. 1 Samuel 18, and you don't necessarily need to turn back there in 1 Samuel 18, but in 1 Samuel 18, God and Moses is having a little heart-to-heart. And God is a little upset with Moses because the Israelites want a king. A king. And God's kind of thinking, well, wait a minute here. Aren't I the one who brought you out of the land of Egypt? Aren't I the one who brought you out of the house of bondage? Didn't I go along with Joshua and help defeat all those enemies? Aren't I the one who gave you the infrastructure legislatively and civilly and religiously that you needed to make this civilization go, and you want a king? Now, it's kind of interesting that God knew in his plan that they would want a king. And in Genesis 17, there is a promise of a king. And in Deuteronomy 17, there's principles. The king's not supposed to multiply his wives. The king's not supposed to multiply chariots, remember? So back in the law, Deuteronomy, coming out of Egypt, God knew that these men would want a king. So God has a comprehensive plan. The plan started out as a big fancy word, but a theocracy. God was the one in charge. Now, he used human beings to, you know, work out all the details of his plan. You had the judges, you had Moses, you had Aaron, you had various men to work it through, but God was the head. And what they're saying there in 1 Samuel 18 is, you know, God, we don't want you. We want to have a king just like everybody else. And that was their motivation. It wasn't that this wasn't working, but, you know, sometimes when we have kids coming home from school, but Mom, everybody's doing it. Well, the Israelites were looking around and everyone else had a tangible king and they wanted a king. And God says, sure, I'll give you a king, but you're going to kind of live to regret it. Fast forward to today. So, 1 Samuel 18, God's plan is large enough to include the free actions of man. Here's another verse that I want to put up there, and this is amazing. Got a sermon going on. Acts chapter 2 is Pentecost. And what we've got going on here is God's sovereignty includes the free act of man, that man crucified Jesus Christ. And when we read the latter parts of Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, and we see them crucifying and betraying and beating him, it's not like it's done by gun, you know, with a gun in their back. They're doing it freely. But as you read there up on the screen, he says, according to the definite plan and foreknowledge of God, you crucified and killed your Messiah, in essence. So there's many other passages of Scripture, but basically just what I'm trying to get across here is that God has a plan, and his plan is large enough to include the free will acts of man. And that's another discussion that will take many hours, and books are written on it, just how does that play out, and just how does that look. And like I said, today we're at 30,000. Here's another comfort that you and I have that goes similar with the first one, and that is that this plan was freely made long before man was ever created. And this is kind of interesting. You know, when it comes to the United States of America, when you read and study society, sociologies, when you read and study history of kingdoms and Napoleon and Hitler and the United States taking over and the Louisiana Purchase and taking the land from Mexico and ending up with our continental 48 United States, like, how does all that work? Well, as you read there in Acts 17, he says, and he made from one man, Adam, every nation of mankind. Every nation of mankind fits within this sovereign, inclusive, eternal plan of God. To live on the face of the earth, and this is kind of interesting, having determined their allotted periods, he knew when Moses was taking his staff and throwing it in Pharaoh's court and seeing a bunch of snakes come out, he knew that in 1776 we would have the documents that we have down there in Washington, D.C. He knew that we would no longer be under the English Empire. He allotted their times. He allotted also their boundaries. He knew, again, when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were in the fire, that the United States would not go all the way up to the Hudson Bay, because that was for Canada. So God knew the allotted times, the boundaries for you and I. God's plan is eternal, and it is unchanging. There are many things in life that changes. Robin and I, we've gone through several changes in our life. We started out, first of all, as single, okay? Then we got married, and then we were married without children. And for 4 years, we thought, hey, this isn't so bad. Lots of free time. It's just kind of fun. Her and I, we could do whatever we wanted to do when we wanted to do it, and then we had kids. And those of you who have the new kids, I see Peter and Han back there, life changed dramatically several months ago, didn't it? And it's never going to be the same. But, you know, the new kids, they just changed things up. And then life became very much child-focused. And now when the children leave home, it's a new season of life. There are many changes. We are now empty nesters. Yes. Yes. That's fun, just being empty nesters. It's fun having grandkids go. But we're still working, and there'll be another stage in life. You know, when we are able to come to a point of retirement, then life will slow down a little bit, and then we'll enter another stage of life, and that is when the body really starts decaying and deteriorating, and we're caregiving each other, or we're in some care facility or something, and then we die. But you know what here? God's plan is unchanging. It doesn't change. Look at what Psalm 33:1 says. It says, "The counsel of the Lord stands forever. The plans of his heart to all generations." There is no change in God's plan. Because again, God's plan includes the free will of man. So if Hillary would have been elected, God is still big enough and power enough to bring the United States of America to its end, where God wanted it to be. But now that Donald Trump is elected, God again is big enough and powerful enough to take our nation and bring it to its desired end or conclusion. And there are just so many wonderful concepts about this. But let's take a little bit of time and look at our response. Let's take a look at our response, not only to the election, but what's our response to our life when life doesn't make sense? We've worked hard, we've planned, we've prepared, and things just don't work out the way we should. In fact, on Wednesday, when we have our grief share, Surviving the Holidays, which a little plug here or a shout out, if you know someone who's really struggling with the loss of a loved one, grief share Wednesday night in that classroom, we're going to show that clip, How to Survive the Holidays, a two-hour program. But we will hear, as we've heard many times in grief share, it wasn't supposed to turn out this way. It wasn't ever supposed to be like this. It didn't go according to our plans. It doesn't make any sense to us. Why did he die or she die or they die? Well, our first response here, that you and I have to do is to rest in the fact that God is in control. God's in control. Now, that again, I understand there's some frictions there, because again, which usually then the next question is if God loved me, then, well, why didn't it play out the way I wanted it to play out? And those are, again, some questions that we would be happy to sit down with you individually and work out. But let me show you one here. In Ephesians 1:11, it says, "In whom we have an inheritance, having been predestined according to the purpose of him," and I said this earlier, "who works all things according to the counsel of our own will." You and I have to realize that our ability to understand does not impact the degree of God's control. Just because it's out of control in your life, just because it's out of control and doesn't make any sense to you, does not mean that it's out of control or doesn't make any sense to God. So don't make the correlation, because it doesn't make any sense to me, therefore it must not make any sense to God. Because it's out of control in my life, it's out of control in God's hands. Don't make that correlation. Thank God that he is not dependent upon our ability to understand for him to understand. Does that make sense? So we need to rest in the fact. See, that's the beauty of the Christian faith, is that we can rest in the control of God. And again, as the Courier Times put out, maybe some of you saw it, there was an article in the Courier Times about an interfaith healing service. And they're having an interfaith healing service. The Peace Center is putting it on because of this. A lot of people are calling the Peace Center because they're upset and they don't know what to do with their anger and frustration. And I guess in some sense, they need to find out how to deal with that. But you and I, without being fatalists, we can say, well, it was God's will. And you know what? I'm okay with that. I may not have liked it. I may not have particularly, that might have been not my plan A, but it's God's will. And I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with that. Because here's the next idea, is God's never going to fit nicely in our box. You know, we always try to wrestle with this incomprehensible God, this infinite God, and yet we're limited and we're finite, and we just think that he should fit in our box. And he'll never fit in our box any more than my very brilliant Gideon 3-year-old grandson should understand quantum physics. He will never understand that as a 3-year-old, just like I will never fully understand God as a 3-year-old guy. We need to just simply trust God and rest in God's plan and providence. So never doubt in the dark what you know to be true in the light. And here's again something that is really kind of sad in a way. We in here, church on Sunday morning, we sing trust and obey. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. And we sing that to some degree, with some degree of honesty. And as soon as we go outside and life becomes precarious, we go, well, wait a minute here. No, trust him. Trust him in the difficulties of life as well. The next question is, we need to deal with just some of these nagging questions we have. I'm going to show you just a short 2-minute video clip. Again, by me showing you this video clip does not mean I endorse the movie. I don't even think I've seen the movie. But it's just a way of capsulizing in just a couple of minutes what sometimes we wrestle with all the time.
And we just don't know it. Whether it's by accident or by design, there's not a thing we can do about it. A woman in Paris was on her way to go shopping, but she had forgotten her coat, went back to get it. When she had gotten her coat, the phone had rung, so she'd stopped to answer it and talked for a couple of minutes. While the woman was on the phone, Daisy was rehearsing for a performance at the Paris Opera House. While she was rehearsing, the woman off the phone now had gone outside to get a taxi. a taxi driver had dropped off a fare earlier and had stopped to get a cup of coffee. And all the while, Daisy was rehearsing. And this cab driver, who dropped off the earlier fare and had stopped to get the cup of coffee, had picked up the lady who was going shopping and had missed getting the earlier cab. The taxi had to stop for a man crossing the street who had left for work 5 minutes later than he normally did because he forgot to set his alarm. While that man, late for work, was crossing the street, Daisy had finished rehearsing and was taking a shower. And while Daisy was showering, the taxi was waiting outside a boutique for the woman to pick up a package, which hadn't been wrapped yet because the girl who was supposed to wrap it had broken up with her boyfriend the night before and forgot. When the package was wrapped, the woman, who was back in the cab, was blocked by a delivery truck. All the while, Daisy was getting dressed.
And the moral of the story is, when she walked out of that building, the car did hit her and crush her legs. And the question then is, well, why? Why? You know, because sometimes, again, especially with the grief share there, with if it's an auto accident, literally 2 seconds, things could be different. 1,001, 1,002, things could have been different. So why does it work? And what we have to do is we have to deal with these nagging questions, and then we have to dismiss them. And here's one question that we need to deal with, and that is that if God is all-powerful, if God is all-sovereign, did he create evil? And the answer is, of course, no. Deuteronomy says his work is perfect and all his ways are justice, a God of faithfulness without iniquity, just and upright is he. God's will is comprehensive enough to include the free will of man. But then that brings up the next question. Well, why are we all not in very good health? Why are we all not comfortably wealthy? Why do we not all have honor student children? Children that are making more money than we are as adults? And how come our kids and how come our neighbor and how come... Well, why does God allow bad things to happen to us? And this is where, again, we have to understand there's so many concepts here, but again, it's because our life is not about the present. Our life is about eternity. And this is where it's so important because you and I, we get so frustrated. Yeah, but you know, God, I don't think this is ever going to change. You know, the people that I live with, the people that I work with, my family, they're never going to change, and I'm stuck in this rotten thing like forever. And God, can't you ever get me out of this some way? And God's saying, forever? Really? Forever? Not maybe 10, 15, 20 years of some difficulty, but forever? Now, wait a minute. We are eternal beings, are we not? I mean, we were born, but when we die, do we really die? No. Our body quits functioning, but the Dan Scogan that's residing inside this body is an eternal being who will live forever. So yes, we're on earth here 47 years ago or whatever it is, but that's not our sum total of our existence. So why does God allow difficulty to come into our life? He comes into our life to bring us back in line. And we talked about this at length a couple weeks ago. But God lovingly brings us back into his plan. So here's the third response. We need to obey, glorify God, and we need to grow. We need to, first of all, pray. There are several things that you and I need to be praying for. As you see there in 1 Timothy, we need to be praying for kings and authorities over us that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life. The verse goes on, and then it ends up this way, for this is pleasing to God. It's pleasing to God that we should pray for those in authority over us. And we need to be praying that God will guide Donald Trump to be an even better president of the United States than he even intended himself to be. We need to be praying that they will make appointments who will uphold the righteousness of the Bible concerning the sanctity of life and the many other moral issues that we are fighting over. That Donald Trump will again put together a cabinet, and I don't remember how many hundreds of cabinet positions. I've heard anywhere from 300 to 1,000. But all these cabinet positions that he's going to be appointing, we need to pray that they will be very, at least, favorable towards our position rather than anti-God. We need to grow. Did I miss one? We need to obey. We need to grow. We need to grow in our progressive sanctification. Again, many of these verses are all familiar with you. It says, count it all joy, my brethren, when you fall into various trials, knowing that the trying of your faith, which is more precious than joy. In this we greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, you are in heaviness through the manifold trials and temptations that the trial of your faith. Romans 5 begins with the salvation of an individual, and they glory in that. And then we get down to verse 3, it says, and we also glory in tribulation, knowing that tribulation produces patience. And patience ends up with hope, and that hope is not going to disappoint us. And then lastly, we need to get to the point where, in whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, we're to glorify God. Deuteronomy 6:5, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. And you're to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your strength. From the hair follicles to the calluses on our feet, we're to love God. Even when life doesn't make sense. Even when there's much disappointments and discouragements in our life. In our life. Okay. So as we kind of wrap this up, you may say, okay, God has a plan for this planet, but what about me? Does God have a plan for me? And let me just show you two verses, and then I'm done. And the two verses are basically this, Jeremiah 1:5. In Jeremiah 1:5, Jeremiah says to the prophet Jeremiah, he says, before I formed you in the womb, I did two things. I consecrated you, and I appointed you a prophet. God does have a plan. Here's a New Testament passage that proves that there's individual plans for people. In Ephesians chapter 4, he talks about the outworking of the church. And he says, and he has given to the church some apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastor teachers. So at least in that particular passage, there's four different jobs for four different people. So yes, God does have individual plans for us. If you want a really good book that will talk about the individual plans, it's James Petty, Step by Step. James Petty, Step by Step. So, what does all this mean to us here today? Number one, when you and I are facing an uncertain future, we need to focus on the past. We need to focus on the past. What do I mean by that? Have there not been many instances in your life where you initially thought it was bad and yet it turned out for good? Where, whoa, surprise. I was going to show a video clip last week, but we had all kinds of technical problems. But, you know, neighbors, surprise, surprise, surprise. Well, as we looked at it from our perspective, it was not going to turn out well. But surprise, Romans 8 came to fruition. It did work out together for good. So we need to look back. You know, even the psalmist says, why art thou cast down, O my soul, and why are you disquieted within me? And he says, go back. Look back. Or as we sang the song today, we need to start counting our blessings. Number two, I would just encourage you to use your Bible to bring comfort into your life. Study the life of Daniel, a man's life whose parents were probably killed. It was the deportation out of Israel, conquered by Babylon, and they're being pulled hundreds, if not thousands of miles into Babylon to live in a foreign culture with a foreign land, parents and family slaughtered, and now he's thrown into a world that is seemingly out of control. What about Esther? Esther with the genocide of the whole Jewish nation. And the father says, you need to go in front of the king. And Esther says, "Whoa, that's easy for you to say, because if he doesn't reach out his scepter, my head comes off." And the uncle says, "Go and do it. Go and do it." There's just so many others. Joseph. Here's a man who was just doing what God had told him to do. "Hey, go check on your brothers." And the brothers were going to kill him and ended up selling him, went into slavery. We need to study the Bible. You see, because again, one of the verses that give me great comfort is Malachi 3:6-8, where he says, "I am the Lord, I change not." See, the way God worked with individuals and with Joseph and Esther and Daniel, Abraham, he'll work the same way with us, because he's a loving, kind, and he's a merciful God. When life isn't playing out, we are going to have to just trust the truthfulness that God is faithful, that God will not give you more than you're able to handle, and that it will work out for good. Now, if you've never trusted Christ for your eternal salvation, then I would like for, well, it'd be great if we could talk today. If not, it'd be great if we could just briefly set up a time where I could come over and talk to you about your eternal destination, where you can trust Jesus Christ to take away the punishment for your sin. Trust. Trust. God has a comprehensive, eternal, unchanging plan for you, for America, and for this planet. And we just need to trust in Him.